And now it is my very great honor, ladies and gentlemen, to present to you the President of the United States and our next President. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. I can't tell you how very much I appreciate this privilege. I'm very happy to be here in Owensboro. I like that introduction of the chairman when he said next president of the United States. I want to apologize to you for being late. I have a reputation for being prompt. I'm usually on the dot everywhere I go. And when I have an appointment in the White House, the fellow never has to wait on me. But I got in with a bunch of hard-working Illinois Democrats this morning, and they ran me around all over southern Illinois and lost 2 hours, and I couldn't help it. It's always a pleasure for me to visit Kentucky, the most spirited state in the Union. Except my home state of Missouri. This year, I'm glad to see that Kentucky is so prosperous. In fact, the whole country seems better off than it ever has been before. And I want to keep it that way. And you know the best way to keep it that way? Is to be sure that you dislocate the members of that 80th Republican do-nothing Congress. Send Virgil Chapman to the Senate, John Whitaker to the House. That'll help matters to a great extent, because if you elect a Democratic Congress, you'll be bound to elect me, the next president. Judging from the Republican record, when they wrecked our prosperity back in 29, none of us would be prosperous very long if we let these Republicans return to power. There are plenty of good, forward-looking Republicans in this country, but the present leaders of their party do not represent them. These leaders are tied hand and foot to the big business and the Eastern bankers, and they're under control of the terrible lobbies in Washington. If you listen to my speech tonight in Louisville, I'll prove to you just exactly what's happened since the Republicans gained control in 1946, when most of the people in the country didn't go out and vote. You know, only one-third of the people voted in 1946, and two-thirds stayed at home. But look what they got. They got just what they deserved. They got that 80th Congress. You people in Kentucky and the people of other states will make your choice election day as the kind of a government you want. You can choose the Democratic kind, the kind Senator Barkley and I represent, and the kind of government that means a fair share of the prosperity for the farmers and the working people and all our citizens. Or you can turn your government over to a crowd of big business Republicans who will let you sink back into the poverty and trouble you had in 1932. All I ask is that every one of my Kentucky friends look at the record and vote in November. Go out on election day. First thing in the morning, right early, so there won't be too many people in your way, and vote the straight Democratic ticket, and you'll leave the country in safe hands. Now, how'd you like to meet my family? All right, here's Miss Truman. Here's my daughter. Here's my daughter, Margaret.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's my great honor to present to you the friend of all the common people, a friend of everybody, my friend and your friend. I present the President of this United States, Harry S. Truman.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I can't tell you how very much I appreciate this wonderful turnout here at this great city of Geneva. I've heard of it. Been here many a time. And I like the place. You have some wonderful scenery around here, and you also have some wonderful farms, and you have some other things here that are important to the welfare of this great nation. People around here at this time are all apparently very well off. And a lot of them seem not to be interested in the election this year. You know, that's usually the case when people become prosperous. They think things will just run along anyway without their taking any interest in things. That's not the case. That's what you did in 1946, and look what you got. You got that 80th Republican do-nothing Congress because you stayed at home and didn't vote. Now I'm on a crusade through this country to wake the people up and make them see what they have at stake in this election. You have everything at stake in this election. Your own welfare is at stake. And if you let it go by default, well, you won't have anybody to blame but yourself, because when you exercise your right to vote, you control your government. That makes you the government. And when you don't exercise your right to vote, a minority controls the government, and you can expect things that are in the interest of the minority. And that's what happened in 1946. The newspapers and the million-dollar propagandists misrepresent the president. They're trying to keep you from knowing the issues in this campaign. They're trying to tell you that I don't know what I'm talking about. But I'm going to prove to you before I get through with this campaign that I do know what I'm talking about, and I think the majority of the people will know too when I get through, in spite of all the propaganda they can put out. That's why I've come to see you. That's why I'm trying to give you a chance to know the truth. I want you to analyze these issues and then make up your own mind. I'm throwing some light on the fog and the Republican propaganda. And in spite of all this weather in New York today, I've had the finest turnout that I've ever seen anywhere. And I appreciate it, because it shows you are interested, or you wouldn't come out in weather like this to hear anybody talk. You are interested in the welfare of this country, or you wouldn't be here today. And that's what pleases me to death, because if you get interested, you can't help but do the right thing for your own interest. The Republican leaders like to keep you in the dark. Democratic administrations believe in bringing light to the people. A good example, take this Rural Electrification Administration. You have electric lines financed by REA in operation right here in your own county. You know that REA means light for farmers, that 93% of the farms in New York now have electricity. Less than one-third of the farmers in New York had electricity in 1935. Who created the Rural Electrification Administration? Was a Democratic Congress acting on the recommendation of Franklin Roosevelt. Now, who fought the REA? Who fought the efforts of the rural electrification cooperatives to carry power to areas that private power companies wouldn't serve? It was a power lobby. And they fought that rural electrification through the Republican Party. Let me give you some facts and figures about REA in this great state. REA has approved loans totaling nearly $5 million in New York to borrowers for construction of more than 4,000 miles of line. If you want that kind of government, the kind of government that developed REA and all these other forward-looking things that have taken place in the last 15 years, you can't help but go to the polls on election day and vote for yourself. And if you vote for yourself, you'll vote the straight Democratic ticket, and that'll leave me in the White House for another 4 years. How'd you like to meet the lady who runs the White House? And me. Margaret had an engagement in Missouri over the last weekend, and she couldn't break it. Well, they made long before this trip was organized, and I'm terribly sorry. I hope she can come back and see you sometime at a later date.
I give you with great pleasure President of the United States of America and candidate for re-election, Harry S. Truman.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. I've just been over in Cincinnati. I understand that you call Cincinnati a suburb of Hamilton. Is that right? You know, I live in Independence, Missouri. And we call Kansas City a suburb of Independence. And I suppose you do that same thing here in Cincinnati. Cincinnati people turned out at 7 o'clock this morning to greet the president. I had a fine reception there. And I certainly appreciate this wonderful reception here. It shows that you're interested in issues before the country and that you want to find out just exactly what they are. I want to congratulate the people of Hamilton on their fine wartime record. You made a wonderful production record. I believe that fewer man hours were lost here due to work stoppages than in any other similar area in the country. And I visited Hamilton during the wartime to investigate that very situation and to find out how you did it. I was at that time chairman of the committee in the Senate that was investigating the war effort. I want to talk to you about the crusade I'm making around this country to get people to realize what this election means to them. And it is a crusade. I have to come out and face the people personally and individually and tell them just what the issues are, or they don't find out. And that's what I'm doing. My Republican opponents talk about sweet nothings. They don't discuss the issues. And if I didn't come out and face you people and tell you what those issues are and bring them to your mind, you'd never know anything about them. It means a lot to me, but it means more to you. I'm going to repeat that. This election means a great deal to me, but it means much more to you. I'm speaking to you plainly and honestly. I think you know that my opponents in this campaign are not speaking plainly or honestly. They haven't got it in them. They're afraid to face these issues because they know there can be but one result. Candidates who do not speak honestly and clearly are trying to make you believe there aren't any real issues in this campaign. Well, my friends, nothing could be further from the truth. There are great problems facing this country today, and this is no time for soothing, sir. This is no time for candidates who are afraid to tell the people where they stand. In my crusade, I found that most of us have three big things in our minds: peace, prices, and places to live. Now, those things are all tied together. To keep the peace in the world, the United States must remain prosperous and strong. To be prosperous and strong, we must keep our country from going through another boom and bust. To be prosperous and strong and to win the peace, we must have decent places for our people to live. I'm proud of the record of my administration on peace. The record on prices, the record on trying to get places for people to live at costs they can afford to pay. My administration has fought communism at home and abroad so vigorously that the Russian radio hurls slanders at me every day in the week. We've been building up the United Nations, helping small countries like Greece and Turkey keep their independence, and helping Western European nations get back on their feet and become self-supporting again. That's why, and that's the way I've been working for peace. I'd much rather have peace in this country than to be president of the United States. I'd rather much rather have peace in the world than to be president of the United States. And I've said that time and again all over the country, and I mean every word of it. I've been working just as hard to bring down the cost of living. I fought for a strong price control law in 1946 and in 1947 and in 1948. I called the 80th Republican Congress back into special session twice in an effort to get these backward-looking men to pass a price control bill. They wouldn't do it, so prices keep going up and up and up. I've done all that our present laws permit, but that's not nearly enough to stop inflation. We need the kind of laws that the 80th Congress refused to pass, or we are headed straight for another bust. As soon as the war ended, we began converting war construction into temporary homes for veterans and others. But that wasn't enough. I've urged the Congress over and over again to pass a comprehensive housing law that would clear slums,
build rural housing, and provide low-rent public housing. The Republican Party isn't interested. And its leaders killed the housing bill the last days of the special session. They did that with malice aforethought. And they did it for the real estate lobby. You know, that Congress has had more lobbies, more powerful lobbies than any other Congress in the history of the country. And that 80th Congress has stepped every time they stuck out a finger at them. I'll match the record of my administration against the Republican record. I leave the decision to you. All I ask is for you to go to the polls in November. I want to see you elect a Democratic congressman in this district. Congressman Keene, he's a good man. You know, I'm happy to be in the district that was represented at one time by Governor Cox before he ran for president of the United States. Now I'm going to visit Governor Cox this morning in Dayton and have a fine time with him. He's still the same good Democrat he always was. My friend, it's up to you now to decide whether you want to vote for yourselves, vote for your own interests, or whether you want to vote for special interests who have nothing in common with your problem. You really mean what you say. Go to the polls on election day. Vote for yourselves. Vote a straight Democratic ticket. If you do that, you'll have Frank Lasher for governor of the great state of Ohio, and I'll be president of the United States for another 4 years and won't have to worry about a housing problem myself. How'd you like to meet my family? All right. Here's the first lady who runs the White House and tells me what to do. And here's my daughter, Margaret.
I have the honor of presenting to you the President of the United States, Mr. President.
Thank you very much. Well, I can't tell you how very much I appreciate this most cordial reception from this great city of Lima. It's been just like this all the way across Ohio. I think you're interested in the welfare of the country, or you wouldn't turn out this way to see your president and to hear what he has to say. I understand that you've got a great locomotive factory here that is known all over the world. Well, now, on this campaign, I've worn out about 3 locomotives, and I'm going to wear out about 3 more before I get through, so that'll make good for business here in Lima. I'm told by your candidate for governor, your former governor, Frank Lauscher, that this is the center of one of the great agricultural communities of Ohio. Then you are vitally interested in the welfare of this country. You're vitally interested in your own welfare. You see, back in 1932, the net income of the farmers was about $2,500,000,000, and their gross income was $4,500,000,000. In 1947, the gross income of the farmers was $30 billion, and his net income was $18 billion. Now, I wonder if the farmers have studied this situation carefully and understand just why that came about. You see, there was not a fair distribution of income in 1932. There were special privileged classes who claimed the total income of the country, and then they hoped that a distribution would be made from the top down. After the great crash in 1929, a different policy was inaugurated when we elected Franklin Roosevelt to be president of the United States in 1932. He took office in 1933, and immediately policies were established for a fair distribution of the national income, so that the farmer would get his fair share, the man who works with his hands would get his fair share, and the small businessman and the white-collar worker would get his fair share. That's true of this $217 billion income we had last year. There was a fair distribution. Everybody had his fair share of that income. Now, we inaugurated a policy, a labor policy, a farm policy
and a policy for the welfare of the United States as a whole. A forward-looking policy, which goes along with the clock and goes forward. Now, these Republicans would like to turn the clock back. They obtained control of the Congress in 1946 because two-thirds of the people in the United States stayed at home and didn't vote in 1946. They didn't vote. One-third of the population of this country that were entitled to vote elected the 80th Congress. Well, look what you got out of that 80th Congress. They immediately began to turn the clock back. They began to take the privileges away from the farmer. They began to take the privileges away from labor. And they began to legislate for special privilege all down the line. I'm going to discuss that in detail tonight at Akron. I hope you listen to what I have to say. I'm going to take the hide off of them from head to toe. And I'm going to tell you just exactly what your interests are. And then, if you stay at home and don't vote on November the 2nd, you won't have anybody to blame for the situation but yourself. That farm policy inaugurated by the Democrats was one which gave the farmer parity. If you understand what parity means, it means that there was a so arranged that the farmer would receive for what he sells a price that was in line with what he had to pay for what he buys. And he was no longer exploited as a man outside the circle in this great republic. In 1932, 123,000 farms were foreclosed in this country. Last year, less than 800 farms were foreclosed. As I said before, the farmer's income was nearly four times as great in 1947 as it was in 1932. The bank situation is entirely different now from what it was in 1932, and that's the only comparison you can make. Republican administration against Democratic administration. You were afraid to go into a bank in 1932 because you're afraid it'd blow up in your face. Now, for 3 years in this great country of ours, there has not been a bank failure. And the reason for that was the Federal Deposit Insurance Law, which guarantees the deposits of those depositors who have $5,000 or less in that bank. That means that the small depositor in the bank is protected, and the big depositor can take care of himself. Because the banks don't fail under the conditions under which we work now. Don't forget all these things I'm telling you on Election Day. Get out early on November the 2nd and protect yourself. Vote for yourself. And if you do that, you'll vote in your own interests, and you can't help but vote a Democratic ticket straight. You'll send Earl Ludwig to the Congress, and you'll elect Frank Lashey to be governor of Ohio. And I won't have to worry about a housing shortage, for I can still live in the White House for another year. Another 4 years. How'd you like to meet my family? Here's the boss of the White House and the president. She says I'd better quit introducing her as the boss, but how many of you men in this audience don't have bosses at home? Here's my daughter, Margaret.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I certainly appreciate most highly that cordial introduction. I have had a most wonderful reception in this great state, and I certainly wish I could visit every corner of New England and every town in it. Now, this city of Framingham has a reputation as a forward-looking community. I've heard about it long before ever I arrived here. I know that you want to keep right on going forward along the lines laid down by the Democratic Party in the last 16 years. You proved that in 1946 when you sent a fine Democrat to Congress, Harold E. Donohue. If more cities and congressional districts
had followed your example, how much better off we'd all be. We'd never have had that backward-looking 80th Congress if every city and community had done what you did the last time. I'm satisfied that the American people are very sorry that they let so many moss-backed Republicans slip into that 80th Congress. I believe the voters all over the country are going to send those reactionary Republicans back to private life in November. I believe the voters are going to turn thumbs down on the Republican candidate for president, a candidate who won't tell you where he stands or what he believes. He goes around preaching platitudes. You know, he's given GOP another meaning. It now stands for Grand Old Platitude. I believe the American people are entitled to hear from the Republican leaders the full and honest convictions of the candidates. You certainly know where the leaders of the Democratic Party stand. I've gone all over the country, from one end to the other, north and south and east and west. You understand exactly where I stand, and I've tried to make it perfectly clear to you where the Republicans stand, too. I defy you to say what the Republican stands for, Republican candidate for president stands for, except for the Republican Party. And if he can stand for that, he can stand for anything. In the last 16 years, your government has been headed by men who've done everything possible to promote the welfare of the people as a whole. By the people, I mean all the citizens of the United States. We don't restrict our sympathies to the people who make $100,000 a year. We mean everybody in the country. We want to build millions of low-priced houses for working men and their families. We want to get rid of the vicious Taft-Hartley law passed by the Republican Congress under the whip of the millionaire manufacturers. We want to provide federal aid for education so that all our children will have a chance to get a decent schooling. We want to put a national health program into effect so that all Americans can get good medical care and good dental care. We can do all these things if everybody goes to the polls and votes the Democratic ticket straight in November. You can vote for a federal housing program, a federal aid to education program, a federal health program, by marking your ballot for the Democratic candidates. You have a stake in this election. It'll affect your job, your chance to get a raise, your chance to get a better home, your chance to control the high prices that robbed you of all the gains you had before those prices went up. It'll mean the difference between moving ahead and going backwards. The people's campaign is rolling to victory. I can assure you of that. The West is with us. The Central States are with us. And the East is swinging into line. If you'd see the people I've been talking to since I came East, you'd understand what I mean when I say the East is beginning to find out which side his bread's buttered on. All I ask you to do is vote for yourself. Vote for your family. When you come right down to the analysis of our government is the people. And when the people exercise their right to vote on election day, they control that government. When they don't exercise that right, then you get an 80th Congress. See, two-thirds of the people in the United States stayed at home. The people entitled to vote in 1946 didn't have energy enough to go and look after their political interests on election day. And they got the 80th Congress. Don't do that again. Don't do that again. The Democrats are not afraid of the people. The Democrats know that when the people exercise their rights, the country is safe. I'm urging you with everything I have, on November the 2nd, every one of you get up early, go to the polls, and vote the Democratic ticket straight, and you have a Democratic president, a Democratic Congress, and a Democratic organization and government here in this great Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I see them. Appreciate you coming out very much. I'd like to introduce my wife and daughter to you, if you'd like to. Here's Miss Truman. Thank you. around here. Here comes Margaret now.
All right, you hold her up.
Thank you, Margaret.